So I want to thank Judy Stevens for this poem today. Is she here? Oh, I saw her. Oh, she's teaching. She sent me this week, and sometimes, you know. So I want to say, happy anniversary, Unitarian Universalism. Almost. For 450 years or so, you had advanced the idea of a tolerable welcome. It has been a slow and painful growing. Sometimes we've walked out on it. Sometimes our welcome is downright intolerable, challenging us in yet another growing understanding of our limitations and inherent biases and unacknowledged privileges. For those of you who might not remember, let me recap the story of the 1568 Diet of Torda, the first edict of toleration in Europe that we know of. If you'd like to hear more about this fascinating history of religious toleration, I invite you to join us for a class on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. It starts this Wednesday night in the community room. It's a film and discussion, and it's open to all. Reverend Eric Cherry summarizes the story this way. The 16th century was a laboratory for religious reformation in Europe, succeeding in the establishment of Lutheran, Anglican, and Reformed variations of Christianity in many countries and municipalities. But our Unitarian and Universalist traditions found closer affinity to the radical reformers who were unsatisfied with these results and pressed for further changes in theology, practice, and authority. In Transylvania, these radical reformers found traction. The reigning monarch, John Sigismund, took interest in further reform and supported a series of theological debates during the 1560s. Close at hand was his court physician, George Biandrata, who was also a supporter of radical religious reform and familiar with the anti-Trinitarian writings of Michael Servetus and Italian theologians earlier in the century. With Biandrata's influence, the king welcomed another radical reformer, Francis David, to be his court preacher. After a decade of theological debate and the Unitarian influence of David and Biandrata, King John Sigismund's Diet of Torda concluded its theological explorations on January 13, 1568, issuing a statement of religious tolerance that ends with this now often quoted paragraph. And this is the language of the 1500s. In every place the preacher shall preach and explain the gospel, each according to his understanding of it. And if the congregation like it, well. If not, no one shall compel them, for their souls would not be satisfied. But they shall be permitted to keep a preacher whose teaching they approve. No one shall be reviled for his religion by anyone. And it is not permitted that anyone should threaten anyone else by imprisonment, for faith is a gift of God. There's so much that the Edict of Torda points to that our tradition continues to rely upon. The grounded commitment that faith is not endowed with purpose by governments or empires, but by the holy. That a free spirit and a free pew are necessities for free religious communities. Even the stirrings of our commitment to resist authoritarianism as a religious practice is signaled in this edict. So in 2007, I stood in the city of Torda, which is in Transylvania, now part of Romania, but still ethnically Hungarian. I stood before the plaque that you see on the cover of your program. That plaque commemorates this edict of toleration, and as a pilgrim learning about the challenges of the past, I was there to better understand who we are today. One lesson I take from this story of emerging tolerance for religious differences is the very aspirational quality of that openness to difference. Welcoming the stranger, the other, the person who is different or believes differently, was a gradual unfolding. This unfolding was far from easy or peaceful. Wars were fought, thousands and thousands of people died. The Inquisition violently obliterated any heresy against the teaching of the Catholic Church. Martyrs burned for the rights of their own conscience to think and feel for themselves. Defending that right to believe as one must came about because of Michael Servetus' discovery through reading the Bible in its original languages, that the Trinity, the idea that Jesus was God and therefore not human, was not actually in the Holy Text. The fact of Jesus' death at the hand of the Roman Empire wasn't disputed. It's what comes after that that the Unitarians and Trinitarians disagreed upon. You see, if Jesus' resurrection into heaven is called into question, so is his divinity. So if Jesus' resurrection into heaven is called into question, so is his divinity. His role as a human teacher, teaching what it is to be fully human, leading with more love, more toleration, is challenged instead of leading with intolerance and hate. What's more, the authority and power of the church over others is called into question. The power accrued by special appointment by God does not cede easily. The heretics who thought and believed for themselves were dangerous to that amassed power and wealth of the church. The Reformation brought about reforms that allowed the voice of the people to be heard. On the radical edge of that Reformation, where the Unitarians resided, the right of conscience, that command to be ever more tolerant and welcoming, birthed our own current day struggles to be ever more welcoming. I also attended the UU Racial Justice Conference last Saturday with other members of our Racial Justice Task Force. And it was good to hear how other congregations are doing this hard and important work. At one point, Carol Walker, a member of All Souls in DC, spoke about our too easy impulse to say that we are welcoming, as if it were a done deal rather than an aspiration that we're always working to do better with. Carol is African American and has been a powerful voice in the struggle for racial justice in our movement. She knows all too well the many ways that white supremacy culture has influenced our systems and effectively silenced the oppressed and marginalized. We have a history of struggling to increase freedoms that could not be told if we did not first restrict and impede the freedoms of those who need them. It's always true that we cannot help but be embedded in a time and place and a culture that we live in. Our vision and understanding is always limited by this immersion. It's not possible to be anything else but part of the stream. Is this going in and out? Can we just use this one, Bob? I'll just use this microphone here. So it's not possible to not be part of the stream of culture and that is happening around us at all the time. I'm guessing that not everyone listening to Francis David preach about religious toleration and God as one was as rapt as the faces that you see in this 19th century painting of the event. Somebody had to have walked out when they heard such radical inclusion and tolerance. Respect the rights of other Christians who are different than us? Maybe even respect the rights of Jews and Muslims? Live in peaceful coexistence with others? You have to know some walked out and much, much worse. Being offended by others' rights and freedoms is as old as humanity itself. It is this taking of offense that I think needs further attention in our work for justice today. Does your right to think for yourself and claim your right to believe as you must really mean that you can deny others the same freedoms? I see this kind of intolerance everywhere. The religious right uses it to deny the rights of LGBT queer folks and the right to reproductive health care for women. Banning transgender service members is rooted in this religious intolerance, too. And yes, not seeing with the same horror and grief the deaths by gun violence of young blacks and that of whites is a deeply embedded racial injustice some of us are still struggling to see and comprehend. And in our denomination today, We are examining the ways that supremacy systems of race, gender, sexual orientation, ability, and disability have set unacceptable limits on our own welcome. Francis David's words, "We need not think alike to love alike," still ring out. They call us out of our complacency again and again. David's life illuminates how the spirit of free inquiry and ongoing revelation continues and expands beyond the edges of our understanding still. He's an example of holding our faith, our trust in this unfolding process firmly, but our beliefs that can and do change lightly. He believed religious truth needed to be questioned. He saw the Reformation as a process instead of a one-time event. His own journey led him from Roman Catholicism to Lutheranism to Calvinism and finally to Unitarianism. That quest to seek his vision of religious truth and to share it with others led him to prison. And there in 1579, David died a religious martyr and a national hero. There were other important influences in this brief time of toleration that are not always told in our story. This was the time of the Ottoman Empire, a time of growth and ascendancy of liberal Islam, too. The tolerance of the Ottomans provided a shelter for the emerging Protestant movements of Luther and Calvin. In 1548, the Catholic authorities requested the Sultan's representative to either execute or drive out the Hungarian pastor because of his Protestant preaching. The chief attendant of the Pasha of Buda not only denied their request, but issued an edict of toleration as well. According to UU scholar Reverend Susan Ritchie, the Pasha's edict and the lifestyle introduced by the Ottomans became the inspiration for the Edict of Torda of 1568. But that was still so yesterday, right? We are, even now, being fast overcome by great waves of intolerance. While our democracy and our constitution enshrines freedom of religion, that bedrock agreement is being challenged by authoritarianism again. Segregation by race and creed continues. But I have to believe that all is not lost. If we look around, we see people of different faiths, races, and cultures living and working side by side, going to school, just having a life in ways that were unimaginable in 1568. The level of diversity and openness about which who we each are today is a testament to the ever-evolving diversification of life. It's precisely where we lack tolerance that the greatest threat to human life and safety exists. The threats of extremists entering the mainstream are the threats of those who oppose and reject diversity. Those who would use violence and coercion to build rigid walls between insiders and outsiders, saved and unsaved, holy and defiled, us and them, continue to do their dirty work of dividing us. May they not conquer us as well. Liberal thinking, this liberal religion we share, should be about our expanding our understanding of individual rights and responsibilities and universal human rights. This worldview requires tolerance of difference. It requires us to stay at the table and not walk out when we are uncomfortable. I'm not saying this is an easy thing for us to do. We are hardwired to sort ourselves into us and them. It's an evolutionary adaptation of our mammalian brains for humans to even think of tolerating diversity. 500 plus years is nothing on this evolutionary trek. For Unitarian Universalism, 450 years in, we are just getting started on the road of tolerating and celebrating our diversity. Today's work of decentering whiteness means that some of us have to see and hear that we are not the center of everything, that Black lives and voices and grief really do matter. And we must make space for all of them if we hope to ever dismantle this pernicious supremacy culture. Welcoming the discomfort is part of the work. As Michelle said, getting it wrong, getting messy, trying again is what those of us who happen to be white or privileged must learn to tolerate. I do believe that the potential for evil lives inside every human being as much as the potential for good. Our systems are still only good as the people in them. So I look for a system that holds us accountable to our own conscience and to a community of conscience to balance that. It's not a perfect system, but it holds out the possibility of knowing who we are and being known and held in loving community. Any welcome we offer can grow out of that authentic, imperfect, but trying always to get it better community. Renee DuBose reminds us that human diversity takes tolerance more than virtue, human diversity makes tolerance more than a virtue. It makes it a requirement for survival. Because we are now more diverse than we have ever imagined 450 years ago, we must honor the individual's right to speak and think for themselves, especially when we disagree. This self-determination is essential to the liberation and unfolding of human potential. It means that I might heartily disagree with the way women are oppressed and silenced in some of the world's religious traditions. But my goal is not to speak for those women, but to find a way for their own voices and experiences to be heard. There are grave injustices done to humanity in the name of race, gender, culture, and religion. Yet many argue that at the heart of most religions is a simple teaching of how to be good neighbors in a diverse world. To practice tolerance in these difficult days is to admit that we too are intolerant at times. It is time to admit that we have, over these past 450 years, walked out when we should have leaned in. How many times have I turned away and thought, oh, not my problem? Now I want to know when I am giving only lip service to welcome. I want to take up the challenge of welcoming that goes deeper and acknowledges our failures and still keeps on trying. Our welcome is not a done deal. It's a work in progress for all of us. Welcome begins with the respecting of the right of individual right of conscience. We defend and expand it when we live as curiously and openly as possible. When we're faced with those behaviors that we find reprehensible, that violate our sense of decency for all humanity, the way forward demands two things of us. First is that we address the behavior and name it, rather than the person or persons, as wrong or evil. And that we make space for human growth and change. We have to listen to one another and decline to participate in avoidance and ignorance. People who know themselves as fallible and aspiring are able to live into their growing. This tolerance 2.0 is a verb, an ongoing practice, an act rather than a finished product. We must allow that we and others can change and defend the spaces where that it is allowed to happen, rather than defend our own self-righteous sensitivities. I know that growth does not occur in an atmosphere of hate, fear, and judgment. Growth occurs when there is enough light, when the sunshine of reason and there is enough water, the flow of knowing that we too are somebody, and there is enough nourishment from the earth where we are planted, our common ground, a home for all humanity. The spirit of tolerance is about making safe enough space for this growth to occur. All are more welcome when tolerance for difference is practiced faithfully and when hate and fear are left outside. All are more welcome when we work at it every single day. So may this be the practice, that we give ourselves the space to hear one another's truth and grow in our own understanding, that we name oppressive behavior when we recognize it in ourselves and others, and continue to try to love all of our neighbors on this fragile planet Earth. May we find the courage for an aspiring welcome. May we stay at the table, stay in the room, and make space for another truth to be spoken. The world needs hearts that can stay open and present right now. It is our job to bring this fresh and ancient peace to our homes, our neighbors, and our world. May we strive to make it so. Amen.